A sloth, a donkey, and a curious human. Send a prompt and see what they're doing. One hits a record with a question on his mind. Two brothers pick it up, see what they find. Corn takes his time, Herman's got the facts. Back and forth, they never hold back. My weird prompts, come on in, that's where we begin. My weird prompts, glad you're here.
This episode was generated using artificial intelligence. Please verify facts.
Daniel's in the middle of a move, stacking Euroboxes onto industrial shelving, and he hits us with this. Let me read it. We talked about the Eurobox standard, NHDB, these highly durable plastics, as well as the surprisingly heterogeneous world of plastics. It's a chemical description as much as a product class. My question today, as I continue to busily move cardboard boxes into Euroboxes, into industrial shelving and listen to your episodes, is how strong can plastic actually get? Anna is currently having a nap, so I have to wait for her to get up to help me move the attached lid container, effectively known here as the turtle box, out the window and onto our patio storage. But for just a second, I had the rebellious thought. If I just drop this from a meter onto concrete, would the box survive or shatter into smithereens? I decided not to risk the maneuver to avoid incurring the ire of neighbors and potentially also damaging the tools it contains. But it got me thinking. When pop science wants to demonstrate how strong something is, they tend to do things like driving cars over them. When we talk about multi-use plastics and the highly durable plastics in HDPE, is there a theoretical limit to strength, and are there specific variants that are ultra-strong even by reference to the standard boxes, which are already pretty invincible feeling? Can you get plastic to actually be as strong as steel? To continue on our material science kick and our exploration of polymers, let's look at the far reaches of what's possible with engineering this material for storage and other applications.
The turtle box. I love that name. It's the one with the attached lid that hinges open like a shell, right? Daniel's standing there with this thing at a window, Hannah's asleep, and he's doing the mental calculus every engineer does in that moment. What's the failure mode here?
And the neighbors. Don't forget the neighbors. Nothing says, I have my life together, like a shattered plastic box and scattered tools on the patio at 2 in the afternoon.
So we're asking how strong plastic can actually get, and the answer is, well, it's wilder than most people think. We need to start by getting clear on what strong even means, because it's not one number. It's a whole spectrum from won't shatter when I drop it to stops a bullet.
That's quite a range for something most people associate with disposable forks.
And Daniel's Eurobox sits at one end of that range. Everyday HDPE, tough, ductile, does its job. At the other end, there's a material called ultra-high molecular weight polyethylene, or UHMWPE, brand name Dyneema. That's the stuff that actually does stop bullets.
Same chemical backbone, just arranged differently.
Same atoms. Carbon and hydrogen, strung together in chains. The difference is how long those chains are and how they're organized. And that's really the whole story of plastic strength. It's a story about chains.
So let's trace that arc, from the box in Daniel's hands to the theoretical limits of what a polymer chain can do.
To understand how strong plastic can get, we have to zoom in to the molecular level. Plastics are polymers, long chains of repeating units. For polyethylene, it's just carbon atoms linked together with hydrogen atoms hanging off the sides. Picture a string of beads, each bead a carbon atom.
Spaghetti.
Spaghetti works. In something like LDPE, low-density polyethylene, those chains have lots of branches, little side chains sprouting off the main backbone. That branching keeps the chains from packing closely together. The material ends up flexible, translucent, not especially strong. It's what grocery bags are made of.
Flimsy, but it stretches before it breaks.
Right. Now, HDPE, high-density polyethylene, is made using a different catalyst. Ziegler-Natta catalysts, developed in the 1950s, they produce chains with almost no branching, linear chains. Those chains can pack tightly, nestle up against each other, and form crystalline regions. The result is a material that's stiffer, stronger, and more impact resistant.
So the Eurobox in Daniel's hands. Those chains are long, straight, and packed tight. That's why it feels substantial.
And here's where the numbers get interesting. HDPE typically has a molecular weight around 200,000 grams per mole. That means each chain has roughly 14,000 carbon atoms linked together. That sounds enormous, but in the polymer world, it's actually modest.
Modest.
HMWPE, ultra-high molecular weight polyethylene, has a molecular weight exceeding 3 million grams per mole. Some grades go to 6 million or higher. We're talking chains that are 15 to 30 times longer than what's in HDPE.
So if HDPE chains are like, I don't know, a garden hose, UHMWPE chains are a fire hose that stretches across a football field.
That's not a bad image, and length matters because strength in a polymer comes from chain entanglement. Think of it like this. If you have a bowl of short spaghetti strands, you can pull one out easily. But if the strands are extremely long and tangled together, pulling one out means dragging dozens of others with it. The force distributes across the whole network.
So the longer the chains, the more they tangle, the harder it's to pull the material apart.
That's the core mechanism. But entanglement alone doesn't get you to Dyneema. There's a processing step that changes everything. It's called gel spinning.
Gel spinning?
You dissolve the UHMWPE in a solvent, creating a gel. Then you extrude that gel through a spinneret, tiny holes, and draw the fibers at very high ratios. We're talking draw ratios of 50 to 1 or more. What happens is the polymer chains, which start out coiled and tangled like a plate of spaghetti, get pulled straight and aligned parallel to each other.
They go from chaos to order.
From a random tangle to near-perfect alignment. And that alignment is what unlocks the strength. A carbon-carbon covalent bond. The bond holding the chain together along its backbone is incredibly strong. The theoretical strength of a perfectly aligned polyethylene chain is around 100 gigapascals. That's the ceiling. That's what the covalent bonds can handle before they break.
100 gigapascals. Give me a reference point.
Steel's tensile strength is typically between 0.4 and 2 gigapascals, depending on the alloy. So in theory, a perfect polyethylene fiber could be 50 to 200 times stronger than steel, per unit area.
But we don't get perfect.
We don't. Real materials have defects, chain ends, entanglements that didn't straighten out, voids, impurities. Dyneema fibers achieve about 3.5 to 4 gigapascals of tensile strength. That's still remarkable. 2 to 3 times the strength of high-grade steel on a cross-section basis. But the number everyone quotes is specific strength.
Explain that.
Specific strength is strength divided by density. Strength-to-weight ratio. Steel is dense, around 7.8 grams per cubic centimeter. Dyneema is less than 1 gram per cubic centimeter. So even though Dyneema's absolute tensile strength is only a few times higher than steel, its specific strength is 8 to 15 times higher.
So, a Dyneema rope of the same weight as a steel cable is 8 to 15 times stronger.
And that's why you see Dyneema in applications where weight matters enormously. Bulletproof vests, cut-resistant gloves, marine mooring lines, parachute cords, even synthetic tendons in medical implants. A Dyneema rope can replace a steel cable at a fraction of the weight.
But here's the thing. Daniel's Eurobox isn't a fiber. It's a bulk chunk of plastic. And that shift from fiber to bulk is where a lot of the magic gets lost.
This is the crucial transition. So we've seen the extreme end of plastic strength, aligned fibers, near theoretical performance. But why doesn't your Eurobox use that material? Let's look at the practical side.
Because you can't just injection mold Dyneema into a box shape and expect it to perform like the fiber.
Right. Dyneema fiber gets its strength from chain alignment. If you take UHMWPE and melt it, the chains relax back into random coils. You lose the alignment, and with it, most of that extraordinary tensile strength. You can't injection mold UHMWPE into complex shapes the way you can with HDPE. It doesn't flow well, it has an extremely high melt viscosity, and processing it's difficult and expensive.
So if you wanted a Dyneema strong box, you'd need to make it as a composite, fibers embedded in a matrix.
And that's what's done for armor panels. Dyneema fibers are laid up in sheets, impregnated with a resin, or pressed under heat and pressure to form rigid panels. Those panels can stop bullets. But they're expensive, orders of magnitude more than an HDPE Eurobox, and they're not designed for the kind of complex geometry a storage box needs. Ribs, rims, hinges, stacking features.
So the Eurobox is already near the sweet spot for what it needs to do.
It really is. HDPE is optimized for a combination of properties that matter for storage: decent stiffness, excellent impact resistance, good chemical resistance, low cost, and easy recyclability. The impact resistance in particular is what would save Daniel's turtle box in that 1 meter drop.
Let's talk about that drop. Daniel's standing at the window, box in hand, concrete below. What actually happens?
A 1 meter drop onto concrete means the box hits the ground at about 4.5 meters per second. The kinetic energy gets absorbed by the material. With HDPE, the material deforms. It flexes. Maybe the corner dents slightly, but it doesn't shatter. That's ductility. The polymer chains can slide past each other, the crystalline regions can reorient, and the material absorbs energy through deformation rather than fracture.
As opposed to polystyrene, which would just crack.
Polystyrene is brittle because the chains are stiff and can't move much. Drop a polystyrene container and it shatters into sharp fragments. HDPE says, I'll just bend a little. That's the difference between a ductile failure pattern and a brittle one.
But there's a caveat, right? Temperature.
Big caveat. HDPE has a glass transition temperature well below room temperature. It's around minus 120 degrees Celsius for the amorphous regions. But it also undergoes a secondary relaxation, sometimes called the beta transition, around minus 30 degrees Celsius. Below that temperature, the material starts losing its ductility. It becomes increasingly brittle. At minus 40, a drop that would only dent the box at room temperature could crack it.
So, if Daniel were doing this move in a Minnesota winter instead of a Jerusalem summer, the calculus changes.
Dramatically. And that's one of the things people get wrong about plastics. They assume the properties are constant. But temperature matters enormously. So does strain rate. A fast impact is effectively the same as a lower temperature. The chains don't have time to move and absorb energy.
Which is why a box that survives a casual drop might crack if you throw it hard against the ground.
The material needs time to deform. Take away that time, and even a ductile plastic can behave in a brittle way.
So far we've been talking about polyethylene, but there are other plastics out there that push strength in different directions. What about PEEE?
Polyether ether ketone. PEEK is a different beast entirely. It's an engineering thermoplastic with a semi-crystalline structure, but its backbone includes aromatic rings, benzene rings that make the chain much stiffer and give it extraordinary thermal stability. PEEEK can operate continuously at temperatures up to 250 degrees Celsius. HDPE would be a puddle long before that.
And strength?
PEEETSL strength is around 90 to 100 megapascals. That's lower than Dyneema fiber, but higher than typical HDPE. Where PEEEK really shines is in its combination of strength, stiffness, chemical resistance, and high temperature performance. It's used in aerospace components, medical implants, and oil and gas equipment. A PEEEK part can replace a metal part in an engine and survive.
But you wouldn't make a storage box out of it.
PEEK costs somewhere between $80 and $100 per kilogram. HDPE is closer to $1 or $2. The box would be beautiful and cost more than everything you'd put inside it.
There's polycarbonate too. That's the stuff they make safety glasses and riot shields from.
Polycarbonate is fascinating because it's amorphous. The chains don't crystallize, yet it's incredibly tough. Its impact strength is among the highest of any plastic. A polycarbonate sheet can stop a hammer blow that would shatter acrylic. But it scratches easily, and it's not as chemically resistant as HDPE. Different trade-offs.
So this is the real answer to Daniel's question about whether plastic can be as strong as steel. It's not a yes or no. It's a matrix of properties.
And that's where the specific strength versus absolute strength distinction becomes so important. If you're asking, can I replace a steel I-beam with a plastic, one of the same dimensions and carry the same load? The answer is generally no. Dyneema has higher tensile strength than some steels, but its stiffness, its modulus, is much lower. A Dyneema beam would sag under its own weight in a way steel wouldn't.
So steel wins on stiffness.
Steel wins on stiffness, on temperature resistance, on creep resistance. Creep being the tendency to slowly deform under constant load. Plastics creep. Steel doesn't, not at room temperature. So for structural applications where you need rigidity and long-term dimensional stability, steel is often the better choice, even if the plastic is technically stronger per gram.
But if you're making a rope, a cable, a tension member, something that only needs to pull and not resist bending, Dyneema destroys steel.
It's not even close. A Dyneema winch line on an off-road vehicle is a fraction of the weight of a steel cable. It doesn't store dangerous elastic energy if it snaps. It just falls to the ground, and it's stronger. The only real downside is abrasion resistance. Drag it over rocks, and it'll fray.
Which brings us back to storage. What does all this mean for someone organizing their garage?
Given all this, what should you actually do with your storage setup? Here's the practical takeaway. For storage, HDPE Euroboxes are already near the sweet spot. Don't chase exotic plastics unless you have specific needs. Chemical resistance, extreme cold, that kind of thing. The HDPE box is optimized for exactly what you're doing, stacking, occasional drops, temperature swings, reasonable cost.
And if you're worried about drops,
look for boxes with reinforced rims. The rim is the first point of impact in a corner drop, and a thick, well-designed rim distributes the force. Thicker walls help too, but manufacturers also use ribbing, those geometric patterns molded into the sides, to add stiffness without adding a lot of weight. Ribs increase the second moment of area, which is the engineering way of saying they make the wall harder to bend.
And avoid dropping them when it's really cold.
Below minus 30 Celsius, which is not a common storage scenario for most people, honestly. But even at more moderate cold temperatures, the material is less forgiving. If you're moving boxes in an unheated garage in winter, be a little gentler.
The other thing worth mentioning, UV stabilizers. If these boxes are going on a patio, like Daniel's turtle box, they're going to see sunlight.
Right. Polyethylene degrades under UV exposure. The chains break, the material becomes brittle and discolored over time. Most Euroboxes include UV stabilizers, typically carbon black or other additives that absorb UV and dissipate the energy as heat. That's why a lot of industrial bins are black or dark colored. If you're buying boxes specifically for outdoor use, look for ones labeled UV stabilized.
Carbon black, the same stuff that makes tires black.
Same material. It's an excellent UV absorber and it's cheap. Two qualities engineers love.
Let's circle back to the theoretical limit, because I think this is the part that's genuinely mind-bending. You said a perfect polyethylene chain could handle about 100 gigapascals. That's the covalent bond ceiling. How close are we?
Commercial Dyneema is around 4 gigapascals, so we're at about 4% of the theoretical maximum. Some lab-scale fibers have reached 7 or 8 gigapascals with extremely careful processing. But that gap, between 4 and 100, is where all the defects live. Chain ends, misaligned segments, entanglements, voids, crystal defects.
4% of what's possible. That's a lot of headroom.
It is. And it's why polymer scientists keep working on better processing methods. If you could eliminate defects and achieve near-perfect chain alignment and full chain extension, you'd have a material with the strength of a carbon nanotube at a fraction of the cost. But the physics of processing makes that extraordinarily difficult. Chains want to entangle. They want to coil. Fighting entropy is expensive.
Entropy always wins.
Eventually, yes. Thermodynamics has a pretty good track record.
Let's talk about something Daniel mentioned. The pop science demonstration. Driving a car over something to prove it's strong. What does that actually test?
It's mostly theater. Driving a car over a box tests compressive strength and impact resistance in a very uncontrolled way. The tire distributes the load, the box might flex, the ground underneath matters enormously. It looks dramatic, but tells you almost nothing quantitative. You'd learn more from a simple drop test with a known weight and height.
Which is exactly what Daniel was contemplating at his window.
He made the right call not doing it. Not because the box would necessarily break, it probably wouldn't, but because the tools inside could get damaged even if the box survives. Impact force transmits through the material. The box deforms, sure, but the contents feel the deceleration. A hammer inside a dropped box can punch through the wall from the inside.
Hadn't thought of that. The box survives. The contents become the projectile.
Packaging engineering is full of these counterintuitive interactions. The box, the contents, and the drop surface are a system. You can't evaluate the box in isolation.
If we're doing a quick myth roundup here, the biggest misconception is that plastic is always weaker than steel.
On a weight-for-weight basis, that's simply false. Dyneema is stronger than steel by a wide margin. Even on an absolute cross-section basis, Dyneema fiber beats many steel alloys. The misconception persists because people encounter commodity plastics, grocery bags, disposable cups, and generalize.
The second one, stronger means better for storage.
Strength is one factor among many. Toughness, stiffness, temperature resistance, UV resistance, chemical compatibility, cost, recyclability, moldability. You're optimizing a whole vector of properties, not just one number. HDPE isn't the strongest plastic, but it's arguably the best all-around material for a storage box.
The third, if it survives one drop, it's indestructible.
Cumulative damage is real. Microcracks can form and grow over repeated impacts. A box that survives 10 drops might fail on the 11th, and cold temperatures change everything, as we discussed.
Here's a thought I keep coming back to. Daniel's Eurobox and a Dyneema bulletproof vest are chemically almost identical. They're both polyethylene. The difference is entirely in how the chains are arranged.
That's the wonder of polymers. The same atoms, arranged differently, give you a material that's either a flexible storage container or something that can stop a rifle round. It's like the difference between a pile of lumber and a cathedral. Same material, different architecture.
Architecture is really what polymer science is. You're building structures at the molecular scale.
Which is why it's so deep as a field. You're controlling chain length, branching, crystallinity, orientation, additives, processing conditions. Each variable shifts the properties. And the combinations are effectively infinite.
Where does this go next? What's the frontier?
A few directions. One is self-healing plastics, materials that can repair microcracks autonomously. Some approaches embed microcapsules of healing agent that rupture when a crack forms and polymerize to fill the gap. Others use dynamic covalent bonds that can reform after being broken.
The box literally fixes itself.
In principle. It's early stage, mostly lab work, but the concept is proven. Another frontier is nanocomposites, dispersing tiny amounts of graphene or carbon nanotubes into a polymer matrix to boost strength and stiffness dramatically. Even a fraction of a percent can make a measurable difference.
Recycling. You mentioned it earlier. If UHMWPE is so great, why don't we see it in consumer goods?
Cost and processability, mostly. But as recycling technology improves, there's the possibility of upcycling HDPE waste into higher value products. Mechanical recycling degrades the chains. Every time you melt and reprocess, the molecular weight drops. But chemical recycling, breaking the polymer back down into monomers and rebuilding, could preserve or even enhance properties. If that becomes economical at scale, the line between commodity and engineering plastics starts to blur.
The turtle box of the future might be made from yesterday's milk jugs, but with properties closer to today's engineering resins.
That's the dream. Circular economy, high performance, lower cost. We're not there yet, but the trajectory is promising.
For now, Daniel's HDPE Eurobox on the patio is doing exactly what it was designed to do. It's tough, it's ductile, it'll handle sun and rain and the occasional bump. Maybe don't drop it from a window, but know that it's tougher than you think.
If you really want to test it, wait until Hannah wakes up.
The real strength limit of any storage system is the patience of the person helping you move.
That's a different kind of tensile test entirely.
One open question before we wrap. We've talked about matching steel on specific strength. Dyneema already does that. But matching steel on absolute strength and stiffness in a moldable, affordable bulk material, that's still out of reach. Whether nanocomposites or new processing methods get us, this is going to be fascinating to watch.
The covalent bond sealing says it's physically possible. The engineering is just hard.
Thanks to our producer, Hilbert Flumingtop, for making this possible. This has been my Weird Prompts. If you enjoyed this, leave us a review wherever you listen. It helps. We'll be back soon.
This episode's script was written by DeepSeek V4 Pro, with text-to-speech by Chatterbox.
Thanks for listening to our show, my weird prompts, where odd thoughts go. From sloth slow takes to facts on cue, we chase the strange and follow through. Some nights it's news, some nights it's lore, a thought you've never heard before. The host dig in, the host dig deep. The stranger the prompt, the less they sleep. From tiny questions, big ones too. From half-formed hunches to deja vu. If something odd is in your head,
send it in, we'll chase the thread. My weird props, that's the close from sloth, from man, from long ear host. My weird props, until next time, stay curious, keep weird in mind.